Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Greg Hahn, Chief Investment Officer for Winthrop Capital Management. It's Monday, June 15th. With me is Adam Kunz, our lead portfolio manager, and then Charlie Kovarik, who trades high yield for us, and special guest, Lance Birch. Hi, Lance.
Hi.
And missing is Freddie. Freddie's gone. Freddie Leverick's vacationing somewhere in northern Indiana, lost in the woods. So let me create a context for us from an investment standpoint. We're at a really interesting time right now. And we probably could say that with pretty much almost this whole last 10 years. And then I'm going to turn it over to Adam to talk about equities and fixed income strategy and our models. And then we'll circle back and talk about some risk management issues. But the context to understand what's going on right now in the capital markets is really first to acknowledge, I think, that we're living through not one, but two great experiments. It's really dawned on me. We've talked about this experiment in monetary policy, which is built on the monetary policies that were following the financial crisis in 2008, which include aggressive monetary stimulus, but also this other experiment that we're living through, which is trying to control the spread of a coronavirus during a pandemic, which involves keeping the economy moving and then staying socially distanced. So that, if we acknowledge that that's a huge experiment, on top of the monetary policies, this is not normal. We could all agree that we are not living in normal times. So I would tell you as investors, don't think normally. This is not buy and hold. This is the way I've always done it. We need to think through what is a thoughtful in terms of investment strategy and then also preserving capital. So the ramifications for investors are nothing short of significant today. It's impossible. I mean, if we're honest, it's impossible to predict earnings right now because we have no visibility into supply chain disruption. Companies can't estimate revenue, much less there are several companies that can't even estimate their operating margins right now. So trying to put earnings in place is just it's just difficult. And really, in the absence of a way to control the spread of the coronavirus and at the same time reopen the economy, we have to expect an increase in the number of cases. So I liken this to going into a gunfight with a stick and a paper bag. We are literally going into a gunfight, and all we have is a stick and a paper bag. And the intersection of what is we would consider normal and carrying a stick into a gunfight is really this collision of economic ruin. I mean, nothing short of this is just cataclysmic to what's happening in our economy. And the impact on company earnings, obviously, is significant, but it doesn't stop there. It's going to hit states. It's going to hit cities. It's going to hit colleges, universities. As a society, we gather, right? We gather for sporting events, for conferences, conventions, for worship services, for protests. So any way that we come to gather, if we can't do that safely, it's going with in the absence of any type of way to control the virus, we would expect to see an acceleration. And I think that's what we're starting to see now this during the early part of the summer, as people emerge from quarantine, we're going to see an increase, we expect, in the number of cases. So the market's going to interpret that. And that's where we're at this morning, is interpreting we would normally expect this market to sell out. Now, we're coming into this saying that the market's overvalued. The market is way ahead of itself. We've always separated, in order to understand this, we've separated the economy from the financial system, from the capital markets. The economy is decimated, but the capital markets right now are, especially the equity market, up until this last week, have shown tremendous resilience and discounted the slow recovery. And really moved past that to something that's accelerated. So we're seeing hearing a lot of cautionary words from Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, from Federal Reserve Chairman Powell, from a lot of people that are trusted saying, hey, be careful. This is not normal. We expect a slow recovery. And we expect, Winthrop Capital Management expects a slow recovery. So with that, let me turn this over to Adam. I don't mean to paint a negative picture, but more of a realistic picture now, and which is one of the reasons we brought Lance into this morning, is to talk about how we measure, how we look at risk, how we measure risk, and what it means for structuring investment portfolios. But before we do that, Adam, I'm going to turn it over to you to talk about equities and fixed income markets. Yep. So last week on Wednesday, the S&P 500 made back all of the losses that it made at the beginning of the year. So complacency had set in, as you said, Greg, there's a disconnect between economic data and what equity markets were doing. And then that complacency hit a wall on Thursday. It pretty much seemed like nothing mattered last week other than Thursday. So markets were down over 5%. The Dow was down over 1,800 points. But prior to that, we recaptured all the losses. Yeah, the day before that, literally, we had recaptured it all. So in March, we were all the way down at the lowest peak. We were down 30%. Is that
yeah,
what it was?
For S&P.
Yeah. And we recaptured all of that up until when? I mean, it's surreal knowing that the economy is decimated and the market's fully recovered.
Yep.
Okay. But now we're in a new
wall. We hit the wall, right? We hit the wall Thursday. Friday was a very, I don't know, a meh day. We were up, but it just felt really weak. I think low volume kind of just allowed some people to keep the market up. And then today we're down another 600. So the VIX spiked from mid-20s on Wednesday to over 40 on Thursday. I think we're back above 40. So volatility is still here. So the message is continue to be careful, continue to be defensive. What you've seen are over the last 30 days are the sectors that didn't work as well began to catch up. So financials, industrials, real estate all have been outperforming over the last month. And then you've seen healthcare and tech, which have largely been the driver of the recovery, kind of lag, or healthcare is actually negative on the last 30 days relative to financials are up 15%. So you can definitely see a disconnect and people moving around that sector rotation type theme. Now you're also seeing emerging markets and international markets recover more than the S&P 500, up 15% over the last 30 days. So you are seeing a real shift. But I think that was mainly just people trying to find a place where they thought there was value. You know, with the S&P 500 back at its all-time highs and the NASDAQ even higher than that, I think people are just kind of rotating to where something had lagged, trying to pick up, you know, nickels in front of a steamroller. In our models, we've continued to dial back the risk. We're using minimum vol ETFs. We have been buying some dividend, high dividend ETFs across portfolios and taking that from the large cap basis just as a way to, like I said, dial back that risk as we saw the market overvalued. And I think that'll continue because right now earnings just really don't sustain where we are. You're going to see continued negative earnings and many companies are going to be in a negative earning period for quite some time. So continue to be in a risk off mode. Lance or Greg, anything to add there on equities?
Let me just jump over to the international piece of this. So we've underweight international, and in the emerging markets piece of it, we've almost dismantled the entire thing. And the reason there are twofold. One is that emerging economies really grow based on capital flows, and the capital back in the 90s was flowing from the European banks. And after the financial crisis, the European banks didn't have that capital really to lend into emerging economies. So the emerging economies could access the public markets, so debt continued to grow. But when you look at the top seven emerging economies, including the old BRIC economies, which is Brazil, Russia, India, and China, they are either in political turmoil, recession, or both. And it is not an environment that we would knowingly allocate funds just because the index has them into an asset allocation model. The risk, it just doesn't warrant the risk in our opinion. So we've moved a larger portion to domestic large cap just because in our minds, it has the best growth opportunity right now, given what's going on in the global economy. So let me switch, given our time. I want to each of you guys, what's on the summer reading list? Charlie, what do you got?
Well, the first thing I got is actually at Winthrop Capital. We're doing this little fun game where Lance, our special guest today, gives us some finance related questions. And I'm 24 years old, haven't been doing super hot. But one of the questions was about Barton Biggs. And I had not heard that name before. So I've heard that his book, Hedgehogging, is a pretty decent and I think almost classic read. So I think that's on my list to educate myself.
Biggs is a legend. And I will say I am winning this game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Adam, how about you?
Misbehavior of Markets by Mandelbrot. It's kind of an in the weeds book, but it's about fractal math and how it applies to investment. So not for the faint of heart.
That makes my math major so happy.
Who wrote it?
Mandelbrot. He's a mathematician.
All right. That's over my head. Lance, how about you? Speaking of over my head, how about you?
Well, right now I'm reading two books, Managing Humans by Michael Lopp. He is a manager on the West Coast of tech employees. So it goes into how best to manage line-level employees from his perspective as a 20-year veteran managing tech employees. So that's pretty interesting. Also reading Success Mindsets by Ryan Gottfredson. He's actually one of my professors back in college.
Oh, neat.
So this is, I think it's a top 20 nonfiction bestseller right now on the New York Times list, but it's about how to best orient your mindset to achieve success in an organizational setting. So that's really good as well.
Nice.
I just finished Code by Charles Peirce-Gold. So that was really interesting. I highly recommend that. Kind of goes back to how code originated. So it goes back to the 1900s and it takes you through how the electrical signals get converted into code. So I'm not really in computer science.
So all of these books make my choices look like cartoons. So I was going to say Calvin and Hobbes, but my family has a book club. We have a summer book club. We're reading Cat's Cradle by Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh, I love that book.
So what I like, it's really short chapters. Ice Nine. I'm on to Ice Nine.
That is an insane.
And then my motivational book this summer is another Eric Metaxas book, Seven Great Men. And so that's another, if you read any of Eric Metaxas' stuff, it's just really inspiring. All right, off to the summer reading list. Thank you guys for contributing. I want to introduce Lance. Lance, an amazing person. We hired him out of Indiana University. He handles everything that is majorly complicated within the firm, including all of our algorithms, our risk management platform, all of our derivatives hedging with Adam. What else? Am I missing anything, Adam?
Generally holding us all accountable.
I wish we were your mind. All right. So Lance, I'm going to throw a couple questions at you.
Sure. Ready?
So how should investors look at risk in their portfolio today?
So risk specifically, I think the elevated volatility that we're seeing right now is likely going to continue for the next 6 to 12 months at a minimum. So like Adam said, we saw the VIX is over 40 right now. One thing to look at is the 1 year VIX, which is implied volatility over a 1 year period, as opposed to just plain VIX, which is short term implied volatility, 30 days. So the 1 year VIX is actually around 32, 33. So that's saying that the market's implying roughly over 30% volatility for the next year. So long-term average for implied volatility is about 20. So over the next year, market's telling us you're going to see really elevated volatility, which is definitely something to manage expectations for.
Okay, so investors that are limited to publicly traded securities, how can they manage risk and in their portfolio, especially when correlations increase between asset classes?
So I think the the simplest ways through asset allocation. So just looking at where your equity exposure is coming from and what the estimated volatility is on that. So incorporating things like low volatility, changing the domestic versus international exposure within your equity exposure.
When you say incorporating low volatility, what do you think?
ETFs along the lines of several different low volatility ETFs. Some of them specifically overweight low volatility sectors, while others will take the lower volatility names within specific sectors. And they have volatilities that are roughly 70% of broad market ETFs. And the expected return is just slightly lower. So by incorporating those within an asset allocation, you can dramatically lower the expected volatility of the portfolio while just moderately lower levels of expected return.
So when should investors, and this may not even be a fair question, but when should investors consider increasing risk in a portfolio or decreasing risk in a portfolio? Or should investors just maintain a risk level that's stable throughout a certain horizon?
So a lot of that comes back into the advisor client relationship based on what the risk tolerance is for the client. But assuming that the client's comfortable with a certain risk tolerance, it comes down to what level of expected return you can pick up for a given amount of risk increase. So right now, I think it's time to play defense, given where expected volatility is going to be over the next year. Returns across the board are likely to be moderate, no matter what, because valuations are still, there are areas where they're lower, but across the board, they're fairly elevated. So I don't think you're really compensated for taking that incremental risk.
Charlie, I'm going to pull you into this. Charlie and Lance worked together over the last year to build, actually it's been over a year and a half, hasn't it?
Yes.
A long time. And Charlie alluded to this. Charlie's a math major out of Butler University. But you guys built a series of risk algorithms for Winthrop that allow us to take our 500 plus portfolios and risk score each one on a proprietary basis. And actually, we can go deeper and risk score any mutual fund or SMA manager that we want, as long as we've got that historic performance. So we've got a risk tool. Can you, Charlie, talk a little bit about what that risk tool does?
Of course. So our risk model, which was developed in-house at Winthrop Capital, it's a real snappy little tool that can map ETFs, mutual funds, and individual securities using their both historical and expected volatility and put them into a real intuitive risk score. The risk score that we use is 0 to 100. So this works both on two fronts here. It is a useful tool to communicate with clients with instead of asking your client what your risk tolerances and volatility standard deviations. You can ask at a scale from 0 to 100, but also it does help out in actual investment management decisions. With this risk score, we can see the scores of individual ETFs and of overall portfolios. So we can see where individual portfolios are getting maybe an inordinate amount of risk, and we can scale down that position or swap into something else. Or we can take the other side of it too, is we're able to see where we may have opportunities to take measured risk.
Lance, anything you'd add to that?
I think Charlie did a really good job.
Sorry, are you guys, based on our risk analytics, are you guys seeing any anomalies in the market that are interesting right now based on either risk scoring or just through our fundamental analysis?
I think just a major thing is that investors probably don't know how correlated their assets really are. So with correlation, you run the risk of, I probably shouldn't have used the word risk. I'm going to say too many times in this sentence, but you're just stacking the same type of risk on top of each other.
Yeah. Which is why bonds are still the most uncorrelated risk, uncorrelated asset to equity type risk. So it's why it still serves a purpose in a portfolio.
I'm surprised tips have done as well as they have in a world where we don't have inflation.
Right.
All right. What else? Do we need to cover anything else? We've gone a little bit long. Lance, thank you for joining us this morning. Adam, you got any closing thoughts?
Nothing here. Thanks, guys.
Thank you guys for your comments on risk. And if you guys have any questions during the week to our listeners, please give us a call and we will talk to you next week. Thank you guys.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.